Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
And today, we return to the seminal cult classic, crazy 80s sci-fi, super 80s, super sci-fi movie, The Predator. No, wait, no.
No,
it's just Predator.
It's just Predator.
Just Predator. I'm sure The Predator is another show, is another movie in the franchise.
It is. It's the most recent one, I think.
Okay. This thing really spawned a whole thing, right? Because you got Predator 2 with Danny Glover.
Yep.
And in L.A. set in, like, you know, 2015, which is all gang war.
And it had, I want to say Bill Paxton. Game over, man. Game over.
Game over. Yeah, I'm not entirely certain on that one. But then started crossing over with the Alien franchise, Alien versus Predator, Aliens versus Predators. I mean, you have The Predator, Predators, Predators 2. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous how much this spawned. Probably one of the few awesome games on the Neo Genesis system, or whatever, the Neo Geo, whatever that was called, where you got to play as aliens, predators, or marines.
It was probably Sega.
I think it was like Atari's. Maybe it was a Jaguar. I don't remember. Maybe it was a cross-platform game. I had a Genesis, and I don't remember having that game, so.
Well, I mean, I had a Sega Saturn, and I didn't buy that many games, so.
Yeah.
Sega came out with a bunch of games, so.
Yeah. Sega. Genesis really was the high mark. PlayStation edged the Saturn out. All right, let's dive into it. Last we left our intrepid heroes.
They had just gotten done destroying the rebel base and capturing the lone female and taking her captive and working on their exit strategy. We have an interesting moment where Mac tells Carl Weathers. I forget Carl Weathers' name.
We're going to do this again, huh?
Yes.
We're going to pull up all the names again.
Yes.
It's been more than 2 hours since we saw this movie.
Dillinger, right? Dillinger, because the meme. So Dillinger. Mm-hmm. So Mac tells him to come over here, and he's not sure why. And then Mac tells him to go, you know, like, look over there. And I don't know how he softly does this, but he takes his knife, it softly stabs like the back of his shoulder. And comes up with a scorpion.
Yep, because that happens.
Yeah.
Scorpion's on your shoulder. It happens. Got to have a guy with a Bowie knife take it off your back. Guy who threatened to skin you alive. Or to gut you. I can't remember what he told him he was going to do to him.
And meanwhile, Harold Ramis lookalike tries to tell Billy the... Bill the trail tracker.
The... Native American Indian stereotype.
Yes.
Yes.
Tells him a dirty joke. Can't tell the joke, but it's dirty. It's a very dirty joke.
Me too. Me too. But he actually laughs at this one, unlike the one in the helicopter.
I don't know that he does laugh at it. I don't think
so. No, he does. He like, it's a huge belly laugh.
I don't think he does.
Yeah, he does.
Billy doesn't laugh. Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. I don't know if it was a belly laugh. It was a. Oh my god!
He like opens his mouth as far as it will possibly go.
No way! I know that laugh. No.
Because this is important because right after this, we flash to the ultra 80s Kenner graphics that are showcasing the fact that the alien is watching them,
right?
And he is recording what they're saying. So he's recording Mac saying, you know, come here. And he's recording the laugh. And both of those come back later.
Either that or he's tripping balls.
I mean, he could be doing both. I don't understand why he couldn't be doing both.
He comes from the future. I mean, anything's possible.
That's right. Tripping balls all the time. Every time, all the time. Just constantly tripping. Over billiard balls that have been dropped on the ground. That's what we're talking about, audience.
Taking the analogy, well,
tripping and falling on your face, and then only seeing the world in Kenner graphics.
Make life more interesting, that's for sure.
Super 80s Kenner graphics. with that noise overlaid the entire time.
So onward into the jungle, they go, trying to find their way out to the extraction zone. It's really slow going here at first. I guess they think there's a lot of rebels or something because they're moving like absurdly slow.
Well, so they decide that there's only one way out and it's through this valley.
Right.
I'd be damned if I'd send anybody down that valley, but that's the only way out. And so that's the way they have to go. And they're dragging along this woman who doesn't want to be there, who's part of the
rebels,
renegades,
insurgents,
whoever they are.
The quote unquote bad people.
Yeah. So that's the slow going. I think it's a combination of A, tough terrain, B, not knowing where they're going, and C, having a prisoner, which is always slow going. And everybody wanted to keep their eye on Carl Weathers because everything he said turned out to be a lie.
What? The CIA lie? Shock.
Yeah.
Kind of feel like right now is kind of like that summarization of the Blair Witch trial.
Walking.
Just walking around. Walking. Something about a map.
They're lost. They're walking again. All right, movie's over. Everybody looks angry.
I guess they're really trying to build up about how treacherous and build like how dense this jungle is. Because there's a moment between Mac and Governor Ventura here.
The body.
Now, they ain't never seen a jungle like this before. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if you don't come prepared, you're going to lose it.
And they talk about the heat, too, right? How much they're sweating. And I just feel like if you're used to jungles, they're all like that. But okay.
See, the prisoner tries to make a break for it by throwing leaves in Carl Weathers' face. And gets caught.
Do we ever establish in this movie what she was doing in the renegade camp? Rebel camp, insurgent camp.
She was part of them. She was one of them.
She was one of them? Okay.
Yeah.
So Weathers decides to take her for information purposes.
Information purposes.
He's saying that with air quotes to denote that perhaps the CIA operative had other things in mind, like information purposes.
So...
Yeah, so this is about as slow going as this part of the movie is. Just as we stumble forward into the main plot, which is rushing slowly but headlongly into our intrepid band of heroes as such.
And to go along with the slowing theme, we stop at this moment and Billy's leading the group and he just stares off into the trees.
Yeah.
It's a perfect metaphor about how fast this movie's going because it's going dead stop.
Yeah, it's not quite as slow as Escape from New York was as we pan across Snake Blitzen. Walking over rubble, but it does definitely have its moments. At least this is trying to build suspense.
Billy's just staring off and Dutch goes over to Max like, what's going on? And Max like, I don't know, something's got Billy spooked. And here's the funny part. Dutch tries to like quietly and slowly walk up to Billy. But at a certain point, he's like out in the middle of the open. So I'm not sure what the walking slowly was going to do, because if anybody's looking around, you're standing out in the open. Someone's going to see you.
Yeah, it's very much a here, boy. What'd you find, boy? He's treating him like a tracker dog, kind of.
He doesn't want to spook him walking up behind him.
Yeah. Got me nice and slow, like.
And while you would think there'd be a good explanation to what Billy is going through, no, he just says, there's something in them trees. I don't know.
He's not wrong.
But he doesn't do any like real explaining, like, you know, trying to point it out or like give a location. He's just like, there's something in the trees. I don't know. Maybe it's nothing.
Yeah, he's got that Native American alien sense. The famous Indian alien sense. What? What? That's not a thing. Are you sure? Because it is in this movie.
Sure is. So they press on. Dillinger asks Hawkins to watch the prisoner. It's at that moment she decides to take another chance because, you know, they didn't learn their lesson the first time when she tried to escape. Mm-hmm. She smacks Hawkins with a tree branch, takes off. And that's when Harold Ramis Jr. decides to go tearing off after her.
Yep.
he catches her, but right as he catches her, this blur, this, I don't know. How would you describe it?
It's sort of like a very much a 80s, 90s era Windows paint graphicizer, basically, of a background where you like you put a blob of something and you sort of shift it just a little bit.
So this blur runs right through Harold Ramis Jr. there. Blood goes flying everywhere. And this thing drags him through the brush.
Yep. And leaves the woman terrified. I can't remember if she screams or if she screams.
No, she doesn't. Or no, she's just shocked.
She's just like terrified. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it Poncho? Is that his name? That doesn't seem right.
I mean, I don't know. Could be. It's not like this movie was terribly culturally sensitive.
Anyways. So there's one dead.
Yep. So he gets gutted, dragged off into the woods by this blur, this jungle blur. Is that when he starts shooting?
No.
That's right. That's later.
Yeah. Dutch catches up along with Dillinger and they start asking her questions.
Yeah.
You don't really get an explanation of what happened, just more of, you know, that what she's saying doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It gets interpreted as like the jungle came alive and took him, or the jungle took him. Mm-hmm. Something of that nature. But that's all they can get out of her.
Oh. Harold Ramis Jr. was Hawkins. Oh.
So that wasn't Poncho.
No, that wasn't Poncho.
That was Hawkins. Yeah, that was
Hawkins.
Okay.
So maybe the other guy's Poncho.
Not that that's any better. I
mean. Yeah, and they're like, oh, where the hell is the body? And then that's when Dillinger actually makes a worthwhile contribution. It's like, nah, it's just like what happened with Hopper. So it's, and they're like, oh, better go find the body.
Yeah, they're now looking for the body, right? It's been taken by the jungle. Some of them have to be thinking, what happened to all those people before? Maybe that's what's happened to our guy now, and we need to look for him. And some of them may be thinking, you know, insurgents or whatnot. But as terrified as the woman is, they're all kind of left in a state of, well, I don't know what's going on. And so begins the hunt, effectively.
Right.
Which is not entirely true. We saw the start of the hunt earlier, but this is where the hunted figure out that they're being hunted in the beginning of the most dangerous game.
Da, da, da.
Which turns out to be humans. And if you haven't read that book, I'm sorry. It's a good book. Read it anyways. Well, short story.
As they're searching, you see Hawkins' body hanging from a tree, pretty much mutilated and bled dry. And then it focuses on the governor. Well, I guess if you're going to say Governor Ventura, because they were both governors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two
governors. You got to specify.
Yeah.
We got two governors here.
That's right.
We got two governors and a high magistrate.
God bless America.
Yes.
As the Governor Ventura is walking through the woods with a giant minigun. Okay, maybe it's not giant, but...
It's a minigun. I mean, it's
an absurd weapon.
Yeah, I always like how it's called a minigun, and it's, you know, basically the largest gun that a human can really hold. But it's called a minigun because it's a small weapon on a vehicle. But yeah, wandering around with a giant gun.
And he spots a, I don't know, like a ferret or something. And then next thing you know... Blood splaying off of him. Something goes right through his chest. It looks like an electrical surge goes right through his chest.
Bam! Has that characteristic predator gun noise. Does he get hit by the three red lights first before?
No.
No, okay.
And he just drops dead. Apparently it made a sound that Mac heard, so Mac comes running to find out what happened. And Mac is the first one of the group to see... He doesn't know what he sees, but we know it's the predator.
Sees the jungle blur.
The jungle blur. The telltale shimmer.
Yep.
And so Mac yells, "Sergeant!" and starts, you know, just spray and pray.
Yep. He grabs a minigun and begins decimating the forest around him. And decimate it, he does. It's a good, like, 5 minutes of just him shooting the minigun.
along with everybody else. They don't know what they're shooting at.
No. Nope.
Or they're just going to keep shooting.
The minute one guy fires off, they're all firing off. Everybody's shooting every direction.
It's like a video
game. We know it's not our people.
It's like a video game. You're never going to run out of bullets. Or, you know, grenades from the grenade launcher.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, this reminds me of the Predator video game. Predator versus Alien video game that had four players, two of them predators, two of them humans fighting off the aliens, and the aliens show up. You just jam that fire button. You ain't never running out of ammo. Just jam that fire button as hard as you can.
And so 5 minutes later, not 5 minutes, but
it's probably about a minute and a half. It's a good long time.
The amount of bullets.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of brass that they just dropped.
He fires that minigun until it literally runs out of ammo.
Right.
And just sits there spinning and smoking. Has
the trigger pulled for like a good 5 seconds after.
Yeah.
Letting it spin.
It's always a question mark with those kind of guns because they do overheat. Right. They will melt and or catch things on fire.
Once the noise has died down, everyone's looking at each other like, what were we shooting at?
Yeah.
And then Dutch, you know, gives a look at two guys, Billy and somebody else, and they go running into the woods. The brilliancy of these, you know, commando units is we're going to shoot and figure it out later what we were shooting at. And then because we didn't figure out what we were shooting at, we're just going to send two guys running through the woods finding we don't know what.
Yeah, I feel like in any situation, you got a guy sniped. Right. That's effectively what happened. But let's say it's the insurgents. Right. And they just have a sniper in the tree and he shoots the one guy. Right. And then spray and pray and you don't get him. You send two guys in there. He's just going to snipe them. Like, bad tactics all around, pretty much. But one of the things you catch at the very beginning of the massive lead being fired into the forest is that there is a splash of fluorescent green.
Yes.
That eventually comes up.
You can only assume it's blood from the creature.
Yes. Alien blood. Is glowing green. Which is something of a callback to Star Trek because Spock has green blood.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he does.
It's not fluorescent green. like it's like someone broke a glow stick in half and poured it on the canopy there. Or on the ferns or whatever the heck those things are. Elephant ears. So two down.
So, yeah, Dutch and Dillinger take a look at Blaine's body, Governor Ventura's body. They realize that they don't know what kind of weapon killed him because he's got a giant hole in his chest that's carterized. Dutch asks Mac, hey, what did you see? Hey, buddy, what did you see? And he's like, I don't know, man. I saw something.
Yeah, it's very descriptive.
Yep. Good details. You know, details-oriented, man. So Dutch tells Dylan to get on the radio and tells Mac to set up a perimeter, a defensive perimeter, which is exactly what you want to do with the guy that's clearly not with it.
Yeah, just a little insane. After watching his buddy die.
Meanwhile, while all of that intelligence stuff is happening, the smoking hot hostage finds the alien blood and decides, you know what's a good idea? To touch it. Let's touch this very fluorescent green thing that's unnaturally fluorescent, you know, and glowing.
Yeah.
And let's touch it with our bare hands.
Yeah, why not?
Right?
Yeah.
And of course, Dylan coming up behind her and sees what she's doing, doesn't in any way find it interesting that there's this fluorescent green stuff all over this bush.
I do find it funny that no one really
nobody else saw it
other than her notices the glowing fluorescent liquid that was in the path of all the bullets. I mean, what do they think? There's a bunch of glow sticks out there. Like,
right.
Like there's very little else that is that color.
So Mac's setting up trip wires and booby traps and mortars and flares, frags and claymores.
Yep. Because in some of the people's minds, this is still some kind of insurgent or renegade or rebels or something. They're being attacked by snipers or whatever. So they're going to set up a trap for them so they don't get caught. And then we play the waiting game.
So much waiting in this movie. Again, because it seems like they're trying to draw out a lot more drama than I think is really there.
Well, it's, you know, it's an attempt to build suspense, right?
I guess.
No, I mean, that's what it is. It's supposed to be an action thriller, right?
Right.
Similar to Alien. If you ever watch Alien, there's lots of, like, nothing going on time space.
Well, but maybe it's just because of the setting, because I found Alien much more suspenseful than this.
Because you're on a spaceship.
Right.
And it's also dark for most of Alien, whereas Earth's fluorescent lighting, which is still kind of dark somehow, unlike the jungle, which is decently well lit by the sun, except in the nighttime scenes, one of which I believe is coming up.
We go through the whole, you know, Max mourning Blaine, yep, giving his dead body his flask. We also see the hostage, Anna, and the spot of blood that she put on her pants. And she rubbed on her pants, and now it's her pants are glowing fluorescent green that no one still has seen.
Yeah.
And nobody else is worried about it.
No one else is commenting on the fluorescent green pants.
Totally normal. Not at all something I'd worry about. Radioactive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's consequences.
Super commandos right here.
Then we see our camouflage predator dropping blood everywhere and moving on through the jungle, stopping to heal his wounds. So we see him get out his sack of gadgets and how they treat wounds in the future. Actually, kind of cool.
Yeah, I want to say I really love this scene, to be honest.
They do it in both movies.
Because unlike a lot of science fiction settings where I just have a tricorder and I kind of wave it over my medical problem and it just sort of goes away, right?
There's always a miracle medical thing.
Yeah, this is very realistic, right? This is the same as like Star Wars is very much a, you know, a lived in universe, right? Stuff is banged up and dirty and doesn't work a lot of the times. This is like a very real thing. He's having to take his med kit out. You know, he pops out the thing, he injects himself with something, he, you know, he's doing all of the steps that anybody would do in this situation when they were treating themselves with first aid. It's just, you know, the devices of the first aid are slightly different because he's an alien.
Right.
But it's still you look at it like that's a first aid kit. You can look at it. It's like, yeah, that's a first aid kit. Mm-hmm. Like, He is, you know, trying to patch up his bullet wound.
Field medicine.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that really sells the movie kind of as realistic and not just dumb aliens. I don't know how to put it, but
so then when the predator jams the one thing into the wound, he screams out loud and everybody hears it at that point. At that point, everyone's like, "Oh crap, what was that?"
Yeah. That doesn't sound like an animal. Animal we all know.
It sure as hell not a jungle cat.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we hear Dylan on the radio asking for extraction. And the call comes back that, no, they weren't going to extract them where they are at, that they had to proceed to Sector 3000 for prisoner extraction. So Dylan has to tell Dutch, nope, we got to keep going. They're not going to pick us up here. So now they get this back and forth about how disposable soldiers are and how it's BS, and
basically it's Dutch ringing him about we were just disposable to you, and High Magistrate Carl Weathers coming back with I'm disposable too, I'm here, right? We're all disposable, we're all just part of this game or machine or whatever that, you know, whatever he calls it.
Now they start getting details on what attacked them. Yeah, Max starts telling the story and he tells it like it's like a trauma kind of thing.
Is this where you get the story from the prisoner?
Yes. Of course, you know, Dutch tells the guy who was clearly traumatized to go stand watch.
Yeah. And it's interesting because she shifts to English here, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Which surprises a couple people. But who is it that like calls her out? He's like, speak English or like, I know you speak English, something like that. And she starts speaking English and basically explains that every so many years something would come and drag off men from her village and they never see them again, or they'd have to cut them down, their bodies down. And they just thought it was a creature or a monster from the jungle, basically. Boogeyman, chupacabra, whatever you want to call it. Mothman.
So no, it actually wasn't this part.
Oh, it wasn't here?
No. They talk on a little bit about how, you know, they don't know who hit them, but we got to get out. Dylan's like, whatever's out there, it killed Hopper, and now it wants us. And then it goes, jumps ahead to the middle of the night, Max standing watch, and he's just going off talking to the moon. This is when you could just, you know, again, I guess the suspense thing, because you know that one of them is just mentally gone.
Yeah.
They may have lost two guys to the jungle, but really they've lost three, because the third guy just is mentally, he's lost it.
Just a little crazy.
I mean, cinematically, did a really good job of making him look crazy with the moonlight and the sweat and everything.
Oh, yeah. I will say that the cinematography on this for a suspense movie, suspense action movie, is actually very good. They do a pretty good job of close-ups, of doing the faces right, of that kind of thing. It is just all very 80s.
Something in the middle of the night attacks Mac.
It's a boar.
Oh, it's a boar.
Yeah, it's a giant pig.
Because we see the tripwire go up and the flare go into the air.
Start shooting. I got you. Going all crazy, shooting it. And they finally get a look at it. Oh, it's just a kid, you know.
Found something bigger.
To be fair, boars in the wild, in the forest, can get, in the jungle, forest, whatever. Boars in the wild get gigantic.
Right.
Gigantic. 300-400 pound monsters, basically.
So while they were, you know, figuring out that Mac killed a boar, they're like, oh, wait, the prisoner. What the hell?
Yeah.
They go running back and she's still right where they left her. And they're like, huh, why didn't she run? And Billy's like, maybe you better come take a look at this. And they find that something had taken away Blaine's body.
During the boar escapade, Blaine's body has disappeared.
And the morning comes. And of course, everyone's moving very slowly because I doubt any of them got any sleep.
Yeah.
They're all trying to figure out how the predator took Blaine's body without them knowing.
You know, if the data points are starting to stack up here, you've got, you know, the original gruesome scene they come upon with all the dead bodies in the trees. Then you have one of their guys gets taken and he gets put in a tree. Then you have another guy, you know, gets a hole blown through him with something that's, you know, not a recognizable weapon. And now, you know, something has taken another body from them and their prisoner did not try to escape, which points it very much to being, no, this is not insurgents. This is something different. Something else is going on. Maybe our token Indian is correct. There is something out there in the woods.
So now is when the prisoner starts speaking in English.
Okay.
It talks about how it changed colors like a chameleon.
Like a comedian. That's Jerry Seinfeld. He was really good at it.
And how it took the body. Oh, now we get her name. Yeah.
Took a while. Halfway through the movie.
A little over halfway, but yeah.
We finally have a name for her.
It's at this point that Dutch cuts her zip ties because he's like, all right, you can try to run, but it's going to come after you anyway. So, you know,
he's like, yeah, no, she's as hosed as we are. Although when it killed the first of them, it did not take her. And so that's another key piece of information that will come into play as we move through our story here.
Dylan's wondering why he cut her loose. And he's like, well, because we're going to need everybody to help us. Dylan's like, no, we're going to go 10, 12 miles and we get the hell out of here. And Dutch is like, well, if we don't kill it now, it's going to kill us and we won't be able to get out of here at all. It is at this point that Anna goes, there's something else. When that thing last attacked, you must have wounded it because it left blood behind. And so
yeah,
Dutch is like, well, if it bleeds, then we can kill it. And so now it looks like this is kind of the montage of the setting up the trap.
That was a solid 80s one-liner. If it bleeds, then we can kill it. So many good solid 80s one-liners in this movie.
And like I said, 80s montage. Here we come.
Yeah.
Setting up traps throughout the jungle.
Setting up the traps, cutting things, making twine, doing karate kicks, wax on and then wax off. Oh, wait, no.
I think that's the wrong one.
Yeah! You know, running behind in front of a car, you know, through the snow to Eye of the Tiger. Oh, wait, no. Sorry, wrong movie.
Little interchanges from Dylan, like, this is ridiculous. You think this is going to work?
I'm from the CIA. I'm
from the CIA.
We're
right.
all gonna die. that'd be good on a shirt. I'm from the CIA. Picture Carl Weathers. I'm from the CIA. So they build their basically their little fortress of solitude here to try and trick the thing into killing itself on all of their traps. Is this where they decide that they don't want to use tripwire anymore because they think it can see it?
Yeah, instead they use the vines because, you know.
That's right. Decide they can make vines into a tripwire.
Now is when, you know, starts talking about El Diablo Cazador de Hombres. Yeah, it's talking about only in the hottest years. And this year it grows hot about how, you know, the predator.
Throwback to their conversation about the jungle being super hot.
Now sometimes they find the bodies butchered and sometimes much worse.
Yeah, I knew it was in one of the night scenarios that she tells the stories.
This is like a dusk scene. It's not quite night yet.
So, you know, she's telling them a bedtime story to get them all ready. Let me tell you the story of the
Darth Plague is the
demon
wise.
That eats people.
Boy, without a whole lot going on, we sped through part of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a suspense thriller. There's just not, there's lots of it that it's sort of people waiting for things right. to happen. And then, you know, some action and then waiting for more things to happen. There's not a lot of character development. Almost none, in fact. There's not a lot of deep plot to the story. Like, we're not really trying to figure out what the alien's up to, right? There's no investigation going on here. It's, oh no, this thing is trying to kill us. Let's try and kill it back. Like, not a deep storyline right, here, right. folks.
It's just so 80s, you know, the 80s action, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, nowadays, action movies try to have a plot, even ridiculous plot. But back then, no. Like, we make fun of Michael Bay, you know, like 10, 20 years ago. But in the 80s, Michael Bay would have been the guy.
He would have been king. He would have. King of action movies. All the explosions everywhere.
While we were talking.
Movie advanced slowly.
Yes.
Into the future.
So the trap's all set up. Dutch decides he's tired of waiting, so he walks out into the middle of the tripwires to kind of be bait. And of course, the predator falls for it. He trips a tripwire, gets caught up in the net, lifted into the air, and just real quickly breaks out of the netting and starts shooting laser bolts everywhere.
Yeah. I thought everybody was a little untrigger happy on this one. Like, immediately as it was going up, why didn't everybody just open fire?
Right.
Like, I didn't, that, they would have had it.
And then suddenly they all start falling prey to their own traps, you know? Mm-hmm. I want to say Poncho gets hit with one of the swinging logs.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, you know, as the predator's trying to get away, he lowers his camouflage for a second. And of course, Dylan's staring right at him and sees what it is. And now, of course, Mac's had enough. He's lost it.
Yeah.
Starts shooting into the trees and goes running off into the trees.
Yep. Time to go get this thing. Which, he's not necessarily shooting badly. He's doing it kind of as best as he can in sort of a crazed way.
But he keeps saying, I got you, MF-er. I got you. He starts running off.
Yeah.
Dutch is going to go after him. And suddenly, Dylan decides he's going to be the chivalrous one, you know, yep. Have courage.
Now that I have incontrovertible proof that it's not insurgents, it is in fact a creature from another world or a demon or something, I'm gonna go after it.
See, that's when you know you got heroes in the movie, because suddenly they're not wearing shirts.
Yep. Everybody goes shirtless, much just like Goku in Dragon Ball Z, you know. Everything's just gotten much more real because they are now no longer wearing shirts. And it makes sense that upon seeing an alien, a man from the CIA would have to try and hunt it down. Because we all know from the best CIA man documentary of all time, American Dad, that the CIA is all about capturing and hunting down aliens.
So then we see Mac running through the trees, and he just starts taking clothes off and singing, you know, rock and roll song. I'm gonna have some fun. He just lost it.
Yeah, crazy shirtless man there. To me, it's comical how badly this goes, but it does raise some question marks about sort of the ethics of the predator's hunting strategies. Because, you know, I've heard different people talk about them who have read the books. And yes, there are, in fact, books, folks. There are also alien books as well, some of which have been retconned due to Prometheus and the other movies that have come out since then. Or the other movie, I guess, Romulus is coming out soon. So that'll be the third installment in the Prometheus series, I believe. Romulus looks like a return to the original Alien sci-fi thriller thing trying to kill us.
Yes. It doesn't seem like it's really trying to advance the story, which, I mean, I don't know. I kind of liked advancing the story.
Yeah.
Like Prometheus and Covenant did, but we're not here to talk about Alien.
Yeah. You're talking about a different alien, the Predator. But it does speak. So, like, sometimes he kills with his claw and sometimes he kills with his gun. And I have heard people tell me that when he kills with his gun, it's actually not an honorable kill, which means they're not allowed to take the skull or something like that. But he ends up taking the guy's skull that he kills with the gun. So, like, I don't. He kills several of them with the gun. But I remember very distinctly in the video game, like, that netted you negative honor whenever you killed with the gun. You had to kill with the claw as much as you possibly could. So I'm not real sure. Like, and that was, like, that's one of the things that comes up in Aliens versus Predator. Is the Predators don't have the gun to start with. They get that, like, that's part of their quest through the temple, is to get the gun so they can kill the alien horde at the end of their trial.
Well, in Predator 2, they have, like, a blade, like, boomerang thing.
Yeah.
To wonder where that falls in.
Right, and you gotta ask yourself, I mean, with their kind of technology, with their gun, you know, the kind of gun, shoulder gun he has, laser, it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel.
Right.
I mean, there's no sport here.
Right.
Like, some of the killings, it's kind of like, really? I feel like you're cheating.
Of course, this is where the story kind of starts, is in this movie. So then maybe they didn't have the whole story fleshed out. I mean, maybe those books came after the movie.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Okay. So then they developed it. So then the kind of leeway for the first movie, because, you know, the rules weren't in place for the first movie.
Yeah. But it kind of colors this particular predator as being not a terribly honorable predator. But he gets killed. So obviously he failed his trial.
So as Dylan's tracking down Mac, because Mac's just, you know, leaving a trail everywhere, tossing all of his stuff, he starts looking, and then Mac comes up from behind, pulls him in undercover, and tells him, hey, see that thing's over there. Dylan says, yes, I see it. We can get this thing. I'm going to move around this way and flash him towards you, and then you're going to shoot him.
Yep. Mac does the same, hey, come over here, that he says earlier with the scorpion.
Right.
Which makes you kind of
weary.
Pause a little bit. Yeah. Like, oh, is this a prep? But it actually turns out to really be Mac. And I actually thought that was a really good suspense moment. And they played that really well. I thought they did a good job of that.
Oh, this is where we first see the red dots.
Yeah, so they try to do this thing,
but
it does not work.
Mac gets his head blown off.
Yeah, instead of Dylan going around and flushing it, the creature was watching them, and the minute Dylan goes out, he sneaks up on Mac and basically gets the drop on Mac and blows his head off with the laser gun.
Dylan, hearing this sound but not thinking anything of it, keeps on trying to flush out the predator.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we jump back to the rest of our group with Anna telling them, quickly, quickly move it. And I'm guessing it's Dutch that says it, but says that the predator didn't kill Anna because she's not armed, which I can't see that really being the reason.
Well, if it was.
Well, because, like, in all the visions, it's not like it distinguishes, it could see the weapon. It only sees heat signature. So. At least right. So far that we know.
If they really thought that it was the weapon, then they all should have put their weapons down.
Right.
Yeah. And made a run for it.
Now we go back to Dylan, who's trying to do his plan. Dylan sees Mac because he thinks he sees him.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he does see his dead body and realizes it's been blown off. But then he hears another voice that hears him say, anytime, like you said, from back, you know, when he got the scorpion. Anytime.
Yeah, anytime.
He's looking around because he knows the predator's there. He's trying to find him. And then he sees him. And then sees the glowing yellow eyes. Dylan tries to shoot him. And he gets shot with the laser instead. Oh, he gets his arm blown off.
Yeah.
Cool cinema moment.
It's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
because the arm comes off, still gripping the gun, and the gun's still firing off.
Yeah, yeah. This is like Jesse the Body Ventura taking one in the chest. Not that gruesome. The other guy kind of just disappears into the forest, but Matt getting his head blown off, and then High Magistrate Carl Weathers. Dylan getting his arm blown off. Those are some pretty gruesome scenes.
And then he gets stabbed right through the midsection with the claw.
Yep. So ends
Dylan.
Two more.
Hey, though, credit to the directors. The African-American guys weren't the first to die.
Nope. No, they were not. They were in the middle. Well, I think that's probably where we'll leave it off. This time.
All right.
Yeah. So Predator 4, humans 0. They've managed to wound the Predator once, have not done much more damage to him, and he has killed one governor, one high magistrate, and a couple other folks.
And Harold Ramis Jr.
And they have only managed to kill a pig. Oh, and a whole, like, they killed a whole, like, base of renegades, right? Or rebels or whatever they are.
Yep.
Insurgents. So they did do that. Next time, we'll continue on.
Next time, we should be able to finish. We only got, like, 30 minutes left.
But so much happens in this 30 minutes in comparison to the first hour and a half of the movie. That's true.
I apologize, folks, but like Pat said, this is a suspense-building kind of movie, so, like, the heart of the suspense is just waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. Most of the stuff happens at the end of the movie, including yet another montage of just one man building stuff instead of a bunch of them. It's going to
take a montage.
All right, folks. Remember, we've got a website, patandthefatman.com. We're on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man. Instagram, Pat and the Fat Man. The Fat Man has an X handle, at Fat Man.
1238.
And remember, if you'd like to support the podcast, we would love to have you supporting us, because we are nowhere near break even, folks. Like, nowhere near it. Even just a dollar a show or a dollar a month would mean the world to us. Head over to Patreon, Pat and the Fat Man on Patreon, or you can go to the website, patandthefatman.com, and click the Patreon button. You support us, all the money goes to our lovely and talented editor who makes this podcast enjoyable for all of you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our patrons for supporting us. And I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Get to the chopper. Game over, man. Game over.
If it bleeds, we can kill it. Go ask mama.